Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Lifetime Legacy Lawyer Podcast. I'm your co-host, Thomas Vick, joined by the other co-host, Seth Wilson. Seth, how are you today?
Thomas, I am well. Thanks for asking. It's good to see you. We missed last week due to busy schedules and different things going on, and just nice to be back chatting about estate planning issues for our clients. So,
pretty good. Had a good week so far, and looking forward to the weekend and the spring weather that we've had. You know, that we've had, it almost felt like summer this week. So we've really enjoyed being outside and going to some sporting events and things like that.
Awesome. Well, you had a couple of posts that came out on your blog and email newsletter throughout the last couple of days, and I thought they kind of all flowed together pretty well. So I thought maybe we'd start with a topic we've talked about with some degree of regularity on the podcast in the past, but it is this transfer on death instrument and how that can be used in estate planning, and then other considerations maybe to think about if you're considering using that as part of your estate plan.
Yeah, the transfer on death deed is a great way to sort of complete the full circle of a simple estate plan that wants to avoid probate. So a transfer on death deed will transfer title to a real estate to whomever you designate on the deed. So that might be the kids of the parents. And there doesn't have to be any kind of probate proceeding if a transfer on death deed is executed and recorded prior to death. And that's one of the unique things about the transfer on death deed. It has to be executed and recorded before it will actually be valid and effectuate that transfer on death. But then you don't have to go to probate court. You really only just have to file an affidavit with the county recorder, and that will officially transfer title over to the beneficiaries of the transfer on death deed. And that's a really great way of going about it and completing the circle. You know, a lot of bank accounts, you know, you can add a transfer or a paid on death beneficiary to, for instance, a checking account or a savings account. And then investments, you know, it is very conventional to have beneficiary designations on, you know, whether it's a qualified retirement account, such as an IRA or 401k, or a brokerage account that's not, you know, as a non-qualified investment account. Those usually have beneficiaries on them, and your financial advisor would, you know, strongly encourage you to make sure you've got your beneficiary designations updated. So when people come to me, you know, they say, I've got beneficiaries named on, you know, the checking account, savings account, all of these investments. And really all that they're kind of wondering about is what happens with the house. And my suggestion is, well, let's get a basic estate plan in place and make sure that if there's something that we've missed, we have everything the way that you want it in your will. But then also we can go ahead and add that transfer on death deed, and you've completed the full circle of, you know, every asset has a way of going to beneficiaries without the probate process. So that's sort of what the transfer on death deed does. And I think it can be advantageous, but there are some drawbacks to that. What are your thoughts, Seth?
Yeah, I agree with what you said. And again, in the right context, can be a really great tool and accomplish probate avoidance without the need for a trust. And so in the right situation, proper planning there can avoid the probate, even though you do still have a will-based plan. Now, you can't always guarantee that outcome as strongly as you may be able to with a trust, right? So that's what I always tell clients, like, this is a good plan, but if you need a sure thing, you need to do some other, jump through a couple other hoops, make sure that that's there. But again, in most situations, that works out well. There are a couple things to think about, though, and kind of dovetail the two topics with talking about these types of things with your parents. is if you're going to have joint ownership of a real estate property via transfer on death, let's say you have four kids in the family, you have four kids who own property together, and they will then need to decide together yep. how they want to handle what happens to the house. If everybody's in agreement that, hey, we're just going to all sell the house, we'll hire a realtor to do so, walk through that process, it can be a great tool for that. If one person wants to sell and the other three do not want to sell, what happens, right? Well, that one person has a right by law to seek a partition of the property and then force the sale, which may or may not have been there. So you just kind of want to think downstream a little bit as to what will happen and what the expectation is, and does that make sense in light of all of those factors. And the other thing to consider, and you and I were talking a little bit before we got started here, is there any impact on the transfer on death for a current mortgage, be that kind of a conventional mortgage or a reverse mortgage? You're starting to see that, especially as folks are aging into a different bracket. Some folks are having a reverse mortgage secured by the residence. And different companies may have different policies or procedures as to how that transfer on death deed might be received by the company, because you're changing something in the ownership structure at the death of the mortgage holder. So just be aware of those, kind of talk those through with the providers and or the attorney that's helping you through that process, get those questions answered.
Yeah, and those are great questions to ask, and sort of might be as a part of the conversation that you have with aging parents. So as you're thinking about your parents' estate planning needs, and you know what, how they're going to be taken care of in their, you know, latter stage of their life, you can kind of be thinking about, well, what happens with their house, or what happens with their farm, or you know, we'll talk later on about what happens with the business. And so there are some conversation topics that you can discuss with your family and with your parents. But one of the things that I would want to keep in mind is that, you know, parents want to keep control as long as possible over their healthcare and over their finances. So when approaching that topic, you got to kind of go into it gently and, you know, have an open and honest conversation with them about the situation. But then also understand that, you know, some of it may be a touchy topic. And so you need to kind of walk on eggshells a little bit when you're bringing up these kind of matters with your aging parents.
Yeah. And I think one thing that, just as I've gone through life and met with lots of people, there's times when folks are ready to make and have those conversations and make decisions as a result of that. And there's times when they're just not quite ready to even talk about it. And so as you're assessing that scenario with an aging parent or helping someone kind of through that time in their life, recognize that there's time needed by the parent potentially to get their mind around this reality of, oh, I've got to think about long-term care, or I've got to think about designating someone. And the best you can, I think what's helpful is to help that become their idea, so they start taking ownership of it and going, you know what, I do need to get this done. But maybe you don't come in with a, you know, 10-point checklist of, well, you need a will, and you need a power of attorney, and you need a healthcare, and you need, that can be very overwhelming, especially if somebody already is hesitant to think it through. And so maybe you start the conversation of, hey, sometime it'd be good to kind of talk about what's going on and what your long-term plans are, and leave it at that. Plant the seed and then follow up on it later of, have you ever thought about your healthcare situation? What happens, you know, and use those life events to help prompt that conversation. So, hey, you're going for your annual physical at the doctor. What about your healthcare power of attorney? You know, what would happen there? And then that can lead into the other discussions as well.
Yeah. An excerpt from the blog article says, aging adults value autonomy and maybe reluctant to relinquish control over their daily lives. Open and honest communication is the key to finding this balance. Conversations should be encouraged about medical wishes and future goals with an aging parent or parents. An estate plan can then be created that honors their decisions. So once you've had that conversation with them and kind of opened up the topic, what are the specific subjects that adult kids need to have with their aging parents, Seth?
Yeah, great question. I mean, really the big piece of the puzzle is sort of that who helps you when you can't help yourself, be that from a financial perspective or a healthcare perspective. And there may be, and I see this a lot in my practice, where one of the parents was primarily responsible for and enjoyed taking care of the finances, paying the bills and paying the taxes and making sure that the real estate taxes are paid. And
somebody enjoyed paying the taxes. Is that what you said, Seth? That's a special person.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head with that one. Maybe that was a misspeak. They enjoyed the process, not so much the actual, hey, we paid the taxes. Nope. good point though. That maybe somebody does, but I don't think I've seen that in my practice. Most of us are willing to, but not so much enjoy that process. But that's a great kind of thing to think about. Of look, folks, we know you have maybe a substantial estate, and do you enjoy paying taxes? Because if you don't have that plan in place to minimize the potential estate taxes at the time, that could be a situation where you end up paying more taxes than was necessary with some proper planning. So all kidding aside there, that may be a great way of opening the door to that conversation in terms of the asset transfer.
Yeah, I mean, it's true that maybe it's the wife that has been, you know, leading the financial, you know, matters for the entire length of the marriage, and the husband just makes the money and the wife budgets it and spends it some, or maybe the other way around, you know, the husband is the one that's doing the finances and the budgeting and they're working together, but it's really the husband that's taking care of all the bills and all of that kind of stuff. And, you know, for a spouse that has not done that before, and then their spouse passes away, that is a huge burden on them. You know, I can't think of how many times I've met, for instance, with a wife, you know, a widow now that has recently lost her husband, and she says something like, you know, I wish so-and-so were here because he always handled this kind of thing. And it's kind of a sad deal. But, you know, sometimes in those conversations, there's an adult child that has been talking with the widow about how things have been done by, you know, the husband in the past and how to kind of manage things going in the future. And so, yeah, understanding kind of what their experience has been in the past with finances and then, you know, what it needs to be in the present moment and going forward is really important. And having that conversation, you know, is essential to being able to help your parents.
Yeah. Yeah. And figuring out, I think we've talked about this a couple of weeks ago on who to choose as the personal representative, right? Like these are all good hand in glove type conversations that fit very well together, especially in a multi-child family where you have kind of that, well, do I go birth order in terms of who's responsible? Or maybe you have someone, maybe your youngest was a nurse and that made more sense on the healthcare side because of that experience. Just all those little things can be helpful to start creating the outline of the plan. And then I think too, connecting the parents with an attorney can be helpful of, hey, here's somebody that's close to your office. I can help schedule the appointments or take some of those logistical things off their plate and reduce that resistance to moving forward with that. But all good things there. And I think one of the additional issues that we see in our practice is just, what is this kind of tax planning situation going to look like for folks? Because we don't know what Congress is going to do with the federal estate tax exemption that expires here at the end of 2025. So that's always a good conversation starter as well of, hey, I read about this and I don't know where your estate's going to end up, but apparently we don't really know what the rules are going to be at that time. So maybe we need to have that conversation.
Yeah, especially if one's aging parents are business owners or one of them is a business owner. A business has some kind of value to it, you know, and there may be small businesses that would be under the limit of the estate tax exemption. But there may be some small businesses that are good businesses. They're not, you know, they're not like a public offering or anything, a publicly held company, but they've got a significant amount of value inside them. And just owning that particular business could put them over the top and have to have an estate tax paid because of the value of the business. And so, yeah, that's, and that leads us into our next topic of why estate planning is essential for small business owners. There is this element of the unknown right now about when the estate tax exemption is going to sunset. And I think it's going to go back to $5 million plus inflation. I think it's going to be around $7 to $8 million. If I recall correctly, it's in 2026 when that happens. So here in the next couple of years, we're going to have more conversations about the estate tax, and business owners are going to be the ones that have that conversation with attorneys most frequently.
Yeah. And that's, it's interesting because we all think about dates in a different way, right? I think the term now expires December 31st of 2025. So starting in 2026, the new rules will apply. But again, whether that exemption amount comes back down or goes back up, that could have varying effects on business owners in particular. And we talk a lot in our world where somebody may have a small business and you don't think too much about it, but what if the individual running that small business is a realtor and they have licensing associated with the provision of what they do as a business? The non-licensed spouse can't simply step in and take over and do things because they don't have the requisite qualification to do so. By whatever that entity is, or in a law practice, that's the same way for us. So there are steps that need to be taken to transition that business appropriately and the clients being served by that individual appropriately. And the estate planning documents should account for who's going to kind of step in and transition the business or the clients and what's the plan there. So you have both the business planning side that you need to think about in terms of that continuity, as well as the estate planning side of delegating the appropriate authority. Because if the business sort of says, I don't know who's in charge now, and the employees are trying to run things, it can create some confusion. And so really, that's a two-step thing, looking at both sides of the coin, both the business side and the estate side.
I recently read something, I think it was on X or Facebook or something like this, and I wish I had recalled the details a little bit more clearly, but it was a successful business owner that said something like, if you haven't thought about your business succession plan and put that into place, you really haven't done everything that you need to do within your business. You're not finished yet. You know, you get your business off the ground and you start making money and you're profitable and you've got employees now and things are growing. That's great, but you haven't finished yet. You know, you still have to put that business succession plan into place because, you know, if you don't have that, your business could crumble as soon as you face a period of incapacity or upon death. And so to be thinking about your employees and your families and your heirs, beneficiaries, you got to have a plan in place to be able to make that happen.
Yeah. And so you talk about business success and business succession, and those are two very important concepts in the life of a business. And they run parallel to your estate plan because your business success is feeding your family, so to speak, in terms of how you're doing that. And to have those two go hand in hand is really important. And a lot of times we see that in our practice in small or closely held businesses. We're not talking massive corporations, but things that are the lifeblood of that family, quite literally in terms of income and asset base. And sometimes even that's where the retirement planning is, hey, we've got this business that we've built and we intend to sell at some point, and that becomes how we fund our retirement and those kind of things. And so very important to have those two kind of parallel paths working together. And I think any small business owner would benefit from reading the blog post to get a little bit more detail on what some ideas or kind of some checklist things to consider as they're, like you say, finishing the thinking, so to speak.
Yeah.
Now that you've got that foundation built, now, you know, what does it look like to take a breath? We kind of got it off the ground. We got it running. Now, what do we do with it? And that's a great time to consider that alongside your estate plan.
Yeah. And there are a lot of tools that estate plan attorneys can utilize and business attorneys can utilize to be able to put a plan together. One of the most important ones for business succession planning is having a buy-sell agreement. Who has a right to be able to purchase, you know, shares of stock in the company? Who has the right to, you know, own the business? And, you know, who receives the benefit of the purchase of that stock? That is all put together in a buy-sell agreement. And, you know, it's not something that people like to think about. Business folks, they just want to do the business, right? They just want to talk to the customers, you know, do the jobs. But, you know, having a plan in place with your partners, or, you know, just generally who would have a right to, you know, that buy-sell agreement is an important part of the process.
Yeah. And similarly, if you have an LLC or something like that, you can do member succession agreements or transfer on death agreements for the member interest. And so that's one of those scenarios that, again, you want to ensure you understand, are you now running a business with someone's estate, or are you buying out the estate from, or paying to the estate to buy out the member who'd passed away's interest in the business? How long is that going to take? What are the terms associated with that? A lot of things that you start asking the question and go, oh, I didn't realize there were this many steps, or maybe you weren't aware that, hey, there's some other options here, you know, in terms of the business continuity and long-term planning that may be available to you, like key man insurance and those kind of things. So lots to talk about on that side of thing. And it's really helpful as part of that estate planning process to look at both sides of that coin.
Yeah. Let me just kind of hit the highlights of what is in the blog itself about why estate planning is essential. Now, here are some things to think about for a business owner. Do you have a last will and testament? Do you need a revocable living trust? Do you have a financial power of attorney? Do you have a business succession plan? Do you have a digital estate plan? And do you have proper beneficiary designations? All of those are topics that need to be addressed when talking about a business owner's estate plan.
Yep. Yeah, a great list to get started there. And that succession plan becomes very vital as part of that, and oftentimes can take on a life of its own because it's not so much just the family, but maybe there's other folks who are interested, or partners, as you mentioned, or other members to consider. So definitely a fun topic to think through from a lawyer's perspective, because we like to solve these puzzles and make sure that we've got all the pieces in place. But as you mentioned, from the business owner's perspective, sometimes it's easy to avoid that because, well, that doesn't make me any money. It doesn't keep things going in the right direction, right? And that's why we're in business, is to be successful in that terminology. So again, just good times to have those conversations. You know, I think coupling that with thinking about that for your parents, especially if your parents are business owners, and utilizing all the tools available to you in terms of transfer on death. So good discussion today, Thomas. I appreciate the time.
Yeah, absolutely. For those watching, if you would consider subscribing to the Lifetime Legacy Lawyer podcast, that would be much appreciated. Seth, how can people get in touch with you?
We are located up here at the heart of Hamilton County in Noblesville, Indiana, and our web address is noblesvilleattorney.com. How about yourself?
And my law firm's name is Vic Law. We're located in Greenwood, Indiana, and the best way to get in touch with us is by going to viclaw.org. You can schedule an appointment through the website. So appreciate it. As always, Seth, we'll see everybody next time.
Sounds good. See ya.